Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore is Skyping. Matt, the weather's still over me. I'm under it.
Yeah, you're buried under that weather, man.
Yeah.
You sound like crap.
You know what? I do. And I feel like I sound.
Well, we'll get this podcast rolling so you can bravely saunter back to bed, as all bloggers are wont to do.
You know what I feel like? I feel like the second half of J.R. Smith's game. I feel like J.R. Smith at the end of the game. That was a very fun J.R. Smith night, wasn't it?
I mean, it's everything. That's all J.R. Smith everything.
I mean, he was crazy in the second quarter. Like, he just, I mean, the first half, he just goes off. And it was awesome. It was a lot of fun to watch.
I don't want to overuse, you know, the term swagger gets thrown out there so much that it's cliche, but there's times, I don't know any other word to say it, but when he gets his swagger going,
it's like
he's just able to make these, like, he really does. He plays like a star player for very short periods of time.
He is NBA Jam.
Yeah.
Like, he makes three in a row, and it's like, all right, it's go time.
And the crazy things can happen. And,
yeah.
And you can tell, like, although I will say this, I feel like there are times during the course of the NBA season where different teams, especially the good teams, will just sometimes be like, okay, they won't make a tactical adjustment.
Right.
They're just kind of like, okay, well, let's see if this just holds. Well, if this is how we lose, then so be it. You know, versus like in a playoff series, you're definitely scrambling to make every single adjustment.
Right.
That you can. I feel like last night, like with J.R. Smith, they had to have us a lot where guys were like, this might be a little bit fun.
But he was, I mean, it was a lot of fun to the point where it was fun to watch, because I was actually cooking dinner, as you usually do when you're sick. I was cooking dinner and watching the game at the same time, so I didn't get to like really watch the reaction on Twitter until the fourth quarter. But in the fourth quarter, like, the reaction of Knicks fans on Twitter to the whole thing was, oh, the bad part's coming. Like, they all seemed to know that something was good, like, it was going to turn not their way at some point. And then that last sequence was just fantastic.
No, it's crazy. Smith, in a very minority way, has the same kind of effect that Kobe does, where there are fans on Twitter that are Knicks fans, and they're like, let's get a good possession here.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we move the ball. Let's maybe not let JR touch it for a while. And then there's the JR Smith fans who are, of course, just like rolling over me and like, how about it now? Yeah, look who showed up here. And then,
right,
of course, that final 2 minutes happens and nothing. It's so quiet.
Just, yeah,
birds chirping. It's like, you know, the smart Knicks fans are like, that's who he is. Like, we need him, and that's who he is, and you live with it. Like, if it falls, it's great, and he's hit a few this year. It didn't fall, but it's also, you know, he goes 0-for-4 in the final couple minutes. And I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but Robbie from the Hawks blog was posted on the Island Basketball Twitter. He did a drawing of the Knicks' final play.
That was really great.
And it's just a squiggly line of JR moving in space. My favorite part of that is he works for a harder shot.
Yeah. I think
go catch it's Robbie from Peachtree Hoops. It's R. Callen on Twitter. It's up from last. You have to scroll back through his timeline, but
yeah,
it's worth it. He's got this little squiggly line. Because like JR, like, he turns his back, which of course that cuts off any possibility of him finding a cutter for an easy basket.
Yeah.
And then dribbles around and then shakes and finds his way into a harder shot, which he misses.
It looked like he was in the teacups at Disneyland. Like, he's just spinning. Great. He's just twirling, twirling, twirling.
You know, you're not 100%, but your analogies game is on point this morning.
I feel something. Like it is. It's the cold medicine actually focuses me. I think Dan Devine had it this morning on Ball Don't Lie, basically saying, like, JR should have been like LeBron there, you know? Like, he probably could get to the basket in that situation. And instead, it was just full on, like, check this shot out. And what was great is they just showed highlights of him hitting game winners earlier in the year on horrible, like, 22-foot jumpers fading away from the basket on the left side.
Yep.
And And I made a joke, and others made jokes about, like, oh, this is going to happen again. Like, he's going to take that same shot. And then he took it, and it was just, like, it was so perfect.
It's funny because they always – I really wish in those highlight packages, I know that this doesn't work for the narrative and you don't have time. But if I were in charge of this broadcast, I would do two different sequences. The first would be, like, watch what JR has done this year. And then I would say, of course, on the other hand, and show all of his misses in that same time. Like, speed them up.
Yeah.
And it's like brick, 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 brick. Because I just think it'd be, that's what you need to say is there's a lot more possessions where they don't fall because they're low percentage shots.
Right.
I will say this, though. Two things. One, posting and toasting had a very good kind of wrap up that was brief, but it's basically like, I mean, last night was definitely put this in perspective kind of night for all the teams involved. And yeah. It was the Thunder can pretty much decide when they need to, and defensively they have a gear that they need to hit, but they can also let teams hang occasionally when they're not really focused. For the Knicks, it's without Melo, took the arguably the best team in the Western Conference down to the wire.
Yeah.
And that's a really good game. That's a good loss regardless. And the final point is for the talk of Mike Woodson, well, JR needs to go to the basket there. Melo's not going to the basket, man. Melo's going to catch that thing at the elbow. He's going to face up. He's going to go into the triple threat stance, and he's going to take a jumper.
Yeah, he's probably taking like two dribbles to the right and pulling up for a jumper.
It's going to be a better shot than what JR got. Yeah. JR has to work harder to get a shot off.
Well, and he is very good historically at making that shot. Carmelo is, like that's his shot. He makes a bunch of game winners that way. He that's just kind of what he does.
Right. It's
whether it's a great shot or not, like he at least shows a consistency and not like this like narrative of confirmation bias, but like he legitimately has been one of the most clutch players in the league for 7 or 8 years doing that.
Well, and the other thing I'll say this, if we want to put it more of a outside of the situational context, but more in a basketball kind of perspective, I will say when Melo works and is successful in creating an open shot for himself, even off the dribble, just by creating enough space between him and his defender, that to me converts it into a higher percentage look.
Right.
I only really object when Melo's taking it with the guy's hand in his face, where it seems like he's trying to prove he can knock it down.
Right.
If you work to create, because I don't have a problem for years. I have a little bit of an issue with it now, but for years I had no problem with Paul Pierce going to the elbow because he gets that step back. That's a clean shot.
Right.
It's in rhythm. He's done it a million times. He knows that shot, and he's created space for it to be a high percentage look. I'm not necessarily opposed because this is very big. Because I harp on it so much and I need to say it, and I need to remind myself of it too, and last night was a great example in both games. There are times when a pull-up jumper from long range two is a good shot. It's a matter of curtailing those throughout the course of the game. You don't want a high percentage of your possessions going to those shots, but it is totally cool to have those, especially if you're creating them with open looks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, Good game for the Knicks. Tough loss. It didn't have Melo. No big deal. Just a fun game on Thursday night.
Yeah, it was really fun. That's what I wanted out of that game. I wanted a fun game.
And both games were fun.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I watched the first quarter of Clippers Nuggets, and then I said, "Screw this. I'm going to bed." And so I'm catching up on it now. I just started the second half.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Right now it's 49-49.
I think you'll enjoy it from multiple perspectives. A couple things for you to watch. As you go through it, the second half, Chris Paul is 4 of 5 with 5 assists in the second half. I think he had like 14 points.
Yeah.
And yet, pay attention to how Andre Iguodala defends him because it's absolutely monstrous, beautiful work.
Yeah.
It could have been so much worse. And there's a play late where Iguodala, I talked to him afterwards and I said, "What's the key with Paul?" And he said, "Yeah, he's like the biggest thing is you got to pester him and get the ball out of his hands. He wants to probe, and the more that he probes the defense, the more opportunity there is for your defense to fail.
Right. Because
you cannot, if you give him a second, he's going to make the play.
Right.
the one thing that, you know, it's like the one play nobody else can make, he'll make it. And so he said, you pester him, you try to get the ball out of his hands, and from there, the second it leaves his hands, you do everything possible to keep him from getting it again.
Yeah.
And he kept driving him left, and then there's one play where he drives him left, Paul goes around a screen, he recovers going under the screen to guard the three-point shot, Paul goes into the post, he cuts off the angle for the cutter, Paul kicks it out, there's another kick to Griffin who drives, and Iguodala recovers and blocks Griffin going up for the shot. Not like a monstrous block, just knocked it out of his hands on the way up.
Yeah.
But it was just, there's maybe four players in the league that can make that play defensively.
Iggy is so fun to watch defend because he can defend 1 through 3 really, like, on an elite level, which is fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's just fun to see. And this is a game where, at least so far, Matt Barnes took, I think, 12 shots in the first half. And that you can see how much they miss Jamal Crawford.
Yeah.
Just because someone's got to take the shots. And Matt Barnes ends up taking the shots. I don't know why. He ends up taking 20 shots in this game, which is fascinating to me. But
you're going to see one thing. I don't know whether this was personnel calling out switches or assignments, or this was Carl's decision, or Chad Iskey, the assistant coach of the Nuggets, decision to find these matchups. They repeatedly put Ty Lawson and Andre Miller against Matt Barnes, thinking that he was only going to shoot threes.
Yeah.
And the Clippers said, well, he's 7 inches taller than them, so we're going to put him in the post now. And Barnes killed him. He had 15 at the half. He was a monster. It was working. And then the second half, their help defense, their rotations, and their assignments got better, and then Barnes kind of went back to being Matt Barnes. Carl talked pretty extensively after the game about how they missed Jamal Crawford, and Del Negro said the same thing. I mean, it's just, you know, because here's the big thing. So we talked about it yesterday during the podcast, and I said this in I wrote a piece off the game off of Ty Lawson, who was fantastic last night and is becoming the thing that the Nuggets need him to be the most. But it's a scheduled loss for the Clippers. They didn't have Crawford. So it's absolutely an acceptable loss for the Clippers. There's nothing to take from it. It doesn't pretend any way to the playoffs. It doesn't provide any sort of glimpse into the playoffs. It doesn't prove that Denver's ready to compete for a title. All it is it was a good win for a team that needs to win these kind of games against teams on a back-to-back at home as they try and keep in this playoff race to get home court advantage, where they're so good, 27-3 now, and a totally acceptable loss for a Clippers team that played hard but just didn't have the energy or the manpower to overcome it.
Yeah, I'm not saying if Jamal Crawford plays in this game that they win, but Matt Barnes getting 20 shots in a game is never a good thing. Like,
no.
It will never be a good thing. It hasn't been a good thing since high school. Like, that's just not good. The way Denver played, at least what I've watched so far in the first 26 minutes of this game, Denver's just playing really good basketball. Like, they've been fantastic in this game so far, and they're obviously were fantastic. They win by 15. But I don't know. I don't like blaming losses on schedule necessarily, because Denver, you know, they're gonna have tough schedules and stretches here and there, like the first, I don't know, 3 months of the season when they didn't see home at all. But it is like I don't know. Like I said yesterday, it's a random game. You know, like random games happen.
Yeah.
If the Clippers had won by 15 in this game instead, I don't know that it says anything more than the Nuggets winning by 15 in this game.
Right. And I think, it was really interesting there. So interesting stuff came out of post game. kind of weird. Because George Karl preaches dunks, layups, free throws, three pointers. I think, honestly, this year he switched to dunks, layups, three pointers, free throws, because their free throws have been so terrible.
Yeah.
But he hates that mid-range too.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons I like his way of coaching, because he goes away. I don't have to watch. If I had to watch the Sixers offense for 35 times a year.
Wait, but all I've heard is that George Karl's a terrible coach and that the Nuggets would be so much better without him.
Well, it's to me, it's really fascinating, because it's not like Carl is like buying into all the new advanced metrics that tell you these things. Carl's like, it's not like this is a surprise.
Yeah,
like,
this just makes sense to him.
Because this is not like something new that's come out in the last 10 years. Like, it's always been a bad shot.
Right.
And so he's like, if you have the personnel that can hit it, it's fine. And so he mentioned the other day that when Lawson gets the switch on the big, he actually doesn't necessarily want him taken into the hole. He wants him shooting the jumper because he's got space.
Yeah.
And I said, so post-game, after Lawson hit a series of them by pump faking, stepping in and nailing him, and he was deadly in the second half, 8 of 9 in the second half for Ty Lawson. He was a monster. And knocking in, they were good looks, and we just talked about that. If you create space and they're good looks, that's a good shot, especially yes. for Lawson.
Absolutely.
That's a really high percentage look for him. He's a great shooter. He's the best shooter on the Nuggets. So, ask Carlos.
He probably is.
Lawson. Sorry?
So, I know, it just occurred to me. I was like, wow, he probably is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but yeah, I think I agree. I mean, it's good when he's hitting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he really is a great shooter. I mean, he legitimately is a great shooter when he gets. You'll see by the end of the year, his shooting numbers will wind up being really great because, and he talked about this, about being a second half player, but we'll get to that in a sec. So, I asked Carl, you know, is Lawson the guy that you trust to take those shots? And he said, well, I think Gallo, and when he's hot, and Iguodala, if he's got the size advantage. I didn't say anything, but the answer is no, Iguodala should never take that shot.
Right.
Maybe someday Andre's offense will return to him, but it is gone for now. And Gallo, honestly, I think is better when Gallo fits the. I'm starting to understand why the Nuggets value Gallo as much as they do, because I thought they kind of overvalued him. He's the guy that makes so much perfect sense in the system. More than anybody else, he's the best player for the system because he's great getting to the rim and great shooting threes and everything in between. There are some issues.
Yeah, he really can't hit mid-range jumpers at all.
He's still a solid shooter. I don't necessarily.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he's a bad shooter. It's just like that's not a shot he can consistently make, it seems like.
Yeah, that's not optimal.
Right.
If he was in Doug Collins' system, he'd be horrible.
Right.
He'd be the wing version of Spencer Hawes. So, I'm too mean to Spencer. I really got to stop that.
No, he's really a jerk. That's fine.
So, you know, Carl said that, and then so I went to Lawson. You know, I'm like building the narrative for my little game thing in my head. So I catch Ty one-on-one a little bit while the pack was distracted. I threw quarters out there, and they all scrambled for them. And then I asked Lawson about it, and Lawson said, you know, it's one thing with the system is great, it makes sense, but the way teams are guarding me, they're either flashing out to stop to disrupt my three-point shot off the catch and then backing up, and then I'm driving into guys and getting blocked. I've got to for my game to develop, I've got to have that step back too. I've got to have it to make teams think about it. He's like, because I've seen Russell Westbrook, I've seen Chris Paul use it, and it's really effective. And then he was like, you know, and we fought about it for a solid year. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a player telling me about fighting with his coach. Awesome. You know, and you know, he said it, and basically it came to, I've got to be able to hit that for his development. And I didn't play it up in the piece, but I didn't downplay it either, because the big thing here is guys argue with coaches, and that's supposed to be some sort of storyline. Every player in this league has argued with their coach everywhere they've been.
Right, yeah. Arguing with your coach isn't a bad thing. It's when you're consistently fighting with them and going against the team concept. That's when it's a bad thing.
Right, and Lawson works really hard to work within that team concept, but to me it is a very good thing that he's gone to the step, that mid-range shot, because if the defense, and here's the big thing, he's not going to do it, Ty Lawson's not going to be a superstar, but if with the rest of their offense as efficient as it is, if he can take superstar moments, a few a game, it makes them a much more deadly team. It just improves them that much. It's like imitation superstar.
Sure.
Is almost what it's like.
Sure.
And the system kind of allows for it because you're so worried about their shooters, their slashers, and Fareed that he's got some room to work. And Lawson, the biggest thing is he's just, you know, he's got to just shoot. That's my big thing. I've been yelling at him about all year. I've been saying he's got to do it. When he gets that, he still did it a few times in the first half. He only had 2 points where he catches on the perimeter and doesn't launch. And then the second half, he was just like, F it, and started launching. He's a guy, I'm a guy that always is like, don't shoot so much to all these volume, you know, scorers. I'm definitely, you know, I try and embrace your year of the gunner, and there was a few guys, Crawford's one of them, where I'm just like, screw it.
Hey, but you gotta let it fly if you can fill it up.
Right, but Lawson, that's one where he's honestly, he tries so hard to work within that system, there are times when he just needs to go get and go score buckets.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he's not running pick and rolls. So especially with him. The options for him to get create assists aren't there. He's going to score. And when he does, it changes the whole dynamic.
Yeah, especially with him. He's such a momentum player that you do kind of want him to break the mold every once in a while just to try to build that momentum. Now, you're not talking about a four-minute stretch, but, like, maybe 2-3 possessions in a row when the pace of the game is a little hectic. That's when you want him to try to really gun for his to build that momentum, because once he has that momentum, it is really hard to stop him. And it's not just this, an NBA player gets hot, it's hard to stop him. Like, for him, like, he can, when he has that momentum, he can score literally anywhere on the court. Like, he can get to the basket in a flash, he can hit that three, he can hit the step back two. Like with him, he's one of the few guys in the NBA where you want him to really gun for that momentum just to see if he can then spark a stretch of 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. So people were talking last night about how much fun the Nuggets are to watch, and
they are a lot
because
of fun.
I see them on a nightly basis. It kind of gets lost, and it's interesting for me. I think I figured it out last night. They have more moments that are the crowd starts to roar because of the opportunity.
Right.
They see that ball in mid-flight from the outlet pass with a guy down at the other end, and there's that collective gasp, and then the monster dunk or the lob or, you know, the kick out and transition for the corner three.
Yeah.
And then the place just goes bonkers. Pepsi Center, I gotta say this about Pepsi Center. Week for the first 3 months of the season, and then it's almost like some other sport ended, and all of a sudden people started caring. It's odd. But the last month's been really great. Pepsi Center, really great atmosphere, and it's weird because I don't necessarily know how much the crowd is like. It's not like Oklahoma City or Portland or Utah where the crowd really lifts the team. It's a good crowd. It's a loud crowd, but it's not crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly the altitude and just the fact that, and it really shows you in terms of wanting to look at the whole year and the process of getting ready. Because one thing gets totally forgotten now is in last summer in August, the Nuggets were running their players up and down stairs at Red Rocks Pavilion, which is up in the mountains here. It's an amphitheater here in Denver, and just outside Denver, actually, and a really great concert venue, by the way. Got my first contact high there off of a Blues Traveler concert when I was like 14.
Lovely.
Fun story. So don't do drugs, kids. But the Nuggets are going up and down the stairs of this massive amphitheater. And they're just – even JaVale McGee, who has problems being winded, like, he's in pretty good shape now, and he's able to get up and down the floor. And when you get those kind of athletes in this altitude, it really – you start to see it the more you pay attention. It just kills teams. Because even though the Clippers like to get up and down the floor, there were times last night where they were just like, God, stop running.
It seems like – I don't know. I guess I wonder how much of a difference that makes. Because wouldn't you think the Nuggets have to get reacclimated to it? Like, I'm sure it's a quicker process, but when they're traveling here, they're like, it's not like they're always at altitude, right?
Right.
So I just wonder how much of it, like, not like obviously in a game like that, the Clippers will have to struggle with it more than the Nuggets would. But when the Nuggets are on a road trip and come back, I wonder that first game back what it's like for them. Or if they have a back-to-back where the second one's at home, I wonder what it's like for them in terms of their conditioning.
I would imagine it's difficult. It's also kind of surprising that they don't do better when they're on the road. They've been an inconsistent road team, and Carl talked about that last night. But, you know, it's surprising just because they should have so much more energy coming down to lower altitude.
There's too much oxygen.
Right.
They're weighed down by the oxygen.
They're drowning in oxygen.
Yeah, it's just too much. There's too much breathing going on.
Hunter Miller had some problems defensively last night.
Yes, he is wont to do.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue for them in the playoffs. See, Carl really trusts him, and this is like four times in the last five games I've seen where the Nuggets are running and they're getting all they've had this massive rush off their momentum and playing fast, and then he puts in Miller to be the kind of closer slash finisher, and Miller slows the ball down. Like, he just ball holds. It's weird. So we got a lot of games tonight.
We do.
The Bulls are favored by 4 over the Jazz. The Jazz are on the road. Bulls are at home in a battle of two teams desperately trying to hang on to the rope.
Yeah, I don't like the Jazz on the road. They're a bad
Chicago
road team. They're a bad road team.
I think Chicago gets it together at home. The Nets are favored by 6 over the Wizards. Wizards have, I think, maybe peaked. They're probably going to start tanking pretty soon.
They looked really bad against the Wolves the other night. It's just one game, but they just couldn't take care of the ball. And it's not that, I mean, Rubio had 6 steals, and he was really aggressive in his defense. Like, he had a lot of deflections, had a lot of steals, and he was really, really aggressive. But I don't even know that his aggressive defense caused a lot of the turnovers. Like, there's just a lot of bad passes.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of mistakes. Like, the Wizards just shot themselves in the foot repeatedly. It was kind of impressive to see. I mean, I think they had 24 turnovers in the game.
Jeez.
Yeah. Nene had 7. And he had so many. He had 5 in the first quarter. And it got to the point where later in the game, he turned it over, and it was his 7th. And Britt Robson said, oh, he only has 7? And it was like, wow, he only has 7 turnovers, but the way the game was going, you were actually surprised it wasn't like 10. The team's sloppy.
A really great site that's out there, NBA Wowie.
Yes.
It's NBAWOWY.com. Has really great play-by-play data that the city, that's all I know as the Twitter handle, the city, has put together, and it's got stuff. I've been looking at stuff this morning, like, how do teams shoot after offensive rebounds, which is something I've always wanted to look at, and it's really fascinating. The Knicks are fantastic at it. Looking at, 13.4 of Wall's turnovers come off of bad passes, and that's not terrible, but like Jordan Crawford's was a higher percentage. He's obviously not there anymore, but he had 15%. They're pretty loose with the ball. They look at these numbers, they've got some issues in that area. Well, and it's one where they can't really afford that because they have no margin for error.
Yeah, especially if Beal's not playing, then it really. I don't like those backcourt. I don't like the backcourt duo of when they put Price and Wall together.
No,
at all.
Their point guards are bad for dual point guard lineups.
Yeah.
Fun game. How about this one? The over/under is 221.5. Zach, 221.5.
I can only assume we're talking
favored by 2 over the Rockets.
Oh, I thought you were talking Pacers Magic.
The over/under on that one's like 12. Warriors favored 6 points in a win.
Warriors Rockets. They've given us some good ones this year.
That should be really
Warriors are favored.
Yeah, I think I took the Warriors and the picks, but now I'm thinking about it, I kind of like the Rockets here.
I'm gonna stick with the Warriors. I feel like they've got to pull out of this funk. Like, even in their win over Sacramento, they were not good.
At what point do you start to get really concerned about them not pulling out of it?
Now,
or is there just not enough time left in the season for you to take care?
No, I'm worried about it for them, just because it's not that they've just like been losing games here and there. It's just that they've played terrible basketball for a good stretch. And it's been so bad that it's made me I'm not a reactionary guy most of the time, but it's made me think, like, how much of a fluke was the first 3 months of the season?
Yeah, it's becoming a concern.
I don't typically think like that, so it makes me think, like, maybe there's something behind it.
The Mavericks are favored by 4 on the road versus Detroit. No one should watch this game.
No.
That's a bad game.
Not even Rick Carlisle.
Rick Carlisle needs a break. I'm really looking forward to Rick Carlisle's summer.
He's going to have a great summer.
He needs a sauna. He needs to go spend some time at like a country club.
Go to Vermont. They don't have electricity in Vermont, I've been told. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've been told. Just get away.
I'm not like a country club kind of guy, but for a friend's bachelor party, on the day of his wedding, it wasn't a bachelor party, it was on the day of his wedding, in the morning, we all went to like one of those clubs, and they had the sauna and the massages and the whole thing, and I was just like, God, I really wish I was rich. Like, I want this all the time. It was so incredible.
We were staying at this great hotel in Dallas in January for my lady's work conference. And we went down to the spa one day and got massages and everything. And then there was this, like, eucalyptus steam room.
Yeah.
The greatest thing I've ever done.
Wow.
It was beyond refreshing. You just felt great. Like, it was just so, there was so much heat, but then so much like refreshing eucalyptus smell. It was great. I recommend it. Put one in your home.
It was a Ricky Rubio experience.
It really was.
By the way, I was thinking about this last night. I'm so pissed that we're not going to get to see. I would like it, and the matchup probably wouldn't work out. But how fun would it have been to see Ricky Rubio guard Chris Paul in the playoffs?
Oh, that would have been a lot of fun. We didn't get to see it at all this year because Chris Paul missed. Chris Paul missed both games in Minnesota. Robbed me of my Chris Paul.
Bummer.
I know.
He's ducking Rubio.
He is. I understand it. That's too much adorability.
Doesn't want to fall in love.
No.
Phoenix, here's where you are. You are 7-point dogs on the road to Sacramento.
What is it? Are there Phoenix people who think that there's optimism here?
Not many, but this is a low point. Like, fire everyone. When the Kings, even if you win this game, the Vegas thinks the Kings are going to win by 7 points, it is time to fire everyone.
Yeah. Kings are pretty scrappy at home.
And they can score, and they're on fire right now in terms of offense.
Suns get the number one pick. How fun would a Ben McLemore, Goran Dragic backcourt be? I'd get behind that.
Oh. I want better for Ben.
Well, so do I, but that would still be fun.
I want Ben with some order. You know they'll probably end up taking like Cody Zeller or something. Or they sell the pick.
They'll just say, hey, we've got a Twin Towers with Gortat and Zeller.
Oh, God. Celtics are favored by 4 at home versus the Hawks. Guess, take a wild shot in the dark what I'm doing.
Rolling with the Celtics.
Of course I'm rolling with the Celtics.
Irish
no
roots.
Brainer. The Hawks I will say this, though. It could have been during the worst point of the season for Boston, and I would still take Boston just because every single time the Hawks play Boston, I think that the Hawks should win because I think that they match up and are significantly better than Boston. And every single time I can remember, I know that the Hawks have won, but to me it feels like the Celtics have won the last 700 games against Atlanta.
No, it really does. I, too, would take the Celtics here just because it just feels like they have their number.
I guess maybe now it's NTTHAB. Never trust the Hawks against Boston.
Sure.
And the Sarri acronyms for 500. The Magic are 9-point dogs versus the Pacers. It's a 187.5 over under. There's a 40-point differential between Rockets Warriors and this game.
I'm a little concerned about the Pacers in this game just because they're not a very good road team,
and they keep having weird bad losses.
Yeah,
like I'm still very strong on them for the playoffs, but they just for whatever reason. I mean, that Boston loss was unacceptable. They had a lead, you got to close that game. You got to slam that door shut. That was an opportunity for them to make it clear.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, you know, being the Knicks is great, but that. Boston's the kind of team that's going to scrap with you. Nikola Vucevic, over-under for rebounds tonight. Let's say over-under, slow-paced game, over-under 12.5.
He gets about 12 a game, right?
Probably per 36. I'm not sure about the overall.
Yeah, I think he's just under 12 a game. 12.5. No, I think he goes under just because it's the Pacers' big lineup. I think they'll try to beat him up a little bit, but I still think he gets a double. I mean, he could get 11 and 10, something like that.
He's averaging 11 per game, 12.6 per 36.
Okay, yeah, I would go under, but just slightly.
The Grizzlies are 4.5-point favorites versus Cleveland on the road. This is the kind of game that Memphis used to lose. We've got another appearance by my son on this podcast. Hang on a second.
Yeah, that's good. My dog barked earlier. It's fine.
He comes in and he's all excited. He's all like, Dad, what's up, man?
All he wanted to do was talk some Grizzlies Cavs.
Right.
What does he think about Deion? What does he think about Deion Waiters?
Probably likes him. He's, you know, he has too many toys, so he's low efficiency, so he probably likes Deion.
Yeah, that's true. Grizzlies, this feels like a trap game.
this is a big test, in my opinion. And it sounds crazy because the Cavs are terrible, but Memphis in their best years, I'm sorry, in their best year, in their one really solid good year, would beat teams. They learn to beat teams like this.
Yeah.
If they needed to have the mental fortitude or toughness or focus or whatever you want to use to say, no, we're better than this team. Let's take care of business. Let's put this thing away by the fourth quarter. Let's get out of here. It's not pivotal. Every game in this playoff race is really serious, especially after that loss last night. Like three, four, five are all up for grabs. I think Golden State's going to have to be perfect at home in order to get back in this thing. But 3, 4, and 5 are up for grabs. It's not inconceivable to me that the Clippers are, because also, well, I know the Clippers are pretty banged up right now overall. Talking to some people around the team, they are pretty banged up, and it's nothing major. But they've got a bunch of guys with a lot, and younger dudes with some, they need to get them some rest. And they're going to have to make a decision at some point about keeping pace for home court and keeping pace for the 3 seed versus getting the necessary rest for them. They really have got to start planning it at some point. The Clippers are going to either have to get separation and rest, or just bite the bullet and say, we're going to rest them anyway and we'll try and make up the difference.
Which, they're a team, they're a very good road team. I mean, if I'm them, I just try to get healthy. I would not worry about seeding. Like, if you're really going to be a contender like they believe they are, seeding should not matter.
I agree. That's a really good point.
That's a mindset that they have to have, you know. And I don't know that it's... I don't know that it's a smart thing necessarily, but that's really... You see a lot of teams that benefit by not caring where they shake out, as long as they're in the playoffs.
And even outside the context of the 3 seed, Memphis and Denver are going to have to. Memphis and Denver both have to go to the wire without rest because they both need home court advantage. Because Denver needs it because they're not very good on the road and they're so good at home.
Yeah.
And Memphis has got to get it because Memphis does not want to get into a 4-5 matchup with Denver having home court advantage.
I really hope that that's the series we get out of the 4-5, because that's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be fascinating.
It's a lot of fun.
Contrasting styles, like, that's a lot of fun.
I'm not prepared. I said this morning, I'm not emotionally prepared for it, it's not like I'm torn on where my...
It's your two favorite teams.
I wouldn't say it's two favorite. I like the Bucks more than I probably like Denver. Just from the perspective of, like, it's just going to be really crazy for me to be covering a playoff series with Memphis. That's going to be really weird for me.
Yeah. I luckily won't have to worry about that with Minnesota anytime soon.
Next year, man. Next year.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
They'll get love back. You know, David Kahn will work his magic, and they'll be right back there.
Oh, God. I swear to God, if he's still employed.
Man, the Bobcats are at home. The Thunder are on a back-to-back.
No.
Oklahoma City's favored by 14 friggin' points.
Lay it.
I did. You want to know what? I had to put score predictions. Our tool that we have for picks doesn't allow me to just be like, oh, take or lay the points. I had to put in a score prediction.
Yeah.
I literally, after thinking about it for several minutes, I picked the Thunder to win by 30 points.
Oh, Jesus.
120-90 is what I picked. And I was honestly like, are the Bobcats going to score 90? So no, I do not have a lot of confidence in the Bobcats being able to keep even here. This one's kind of a weird one. The Spurs are favored by 11.5 without Tony Parker at home versus the Blazers.
Yeah, that's a lot of points.
San Antonio either blows teams out or they let them hang to the end.
That's a lot of points, but that's also a lot of Blazers road games. They're awful on the road.
That's a counter. I stuck with San Antonio based on the Spurs are great principle, but
yeah.
This one's a surprisingly fun one tonight. Lakers versus Raptors.
Lakers
are favored by 7.5, over under 207.
That is one. I actually just want to follow your Twitter feed and your mentions for that game. That'll be fun.
Why?
Just because your relationship with Raptors fans, your relationship with Lakers fans, I mean, you talk about bring me your hate for power rankings. No, this is the bring me your hate moment. That 2.5 hours.
How's Amir Johnson look now? How about Dwight Howard's effort there?
Yeah.
Who's clutch now? Superstar Rudy Gay.
I think I like the Raptors to make it a close game.
Yeah, I think they can pull within 7.5. I think the Lakers win, but I think they can keep it within 7.5.
Yeah.
Over under combined Rudy Gay and Kobe Bryant shots, field goal attempts.
Ooh, I would go with 48.5 and probably take the over.
That's a lot. Rudy, I'm gonna say 35.
I've definitely taken the over on that.
I'm taking 17 and 15. And I think that both of them get to the line quite.
Oh, they're both going 20s.
They're both going 20s?
They're both going in the 20s.
And finally, Miami's favored by 13.5 over the Woeful Sixers.
Lay it like asphalt. Do you lay asphalt? I don't know. I'm not a contractor, but lay whatever you do to lay
whatever
things.
Whatever you lay that.
Yeah.
Sixers are sad. Are the Sixers more sad than the Wolves?
No.
I think the Sixers are more sad than the Wolves because at least Adelman's able to pull some good play out of them from time to time.
Well, I guess there is the Rubio factor that lifts spirits. But the thing is, though, is that there's this overhanging, like, if Doug Collins gets fired, nobody worries. But people here are legitimately worried about Rick Adelman retiring after this year because of, like, the situation with his wife.
Oh.
Like, if his wife is still sick, he will not coach next year. That makes a lot of sense to me that he would just be like, ugh, it's not worth it because that's something that clearly like took a toll on him. So I think that's the worry. And then if Adelman leaves, Khan's still there, Love leaves, Rubio leaves, and it's just me. And nobody wants just me here. That's not any fun for anybody. Then it's just me and JJ Barea talking about a golf simulator, which we did talk about after Wednesday night's game. It's fascinating.
That's amazing.
It was great.
I just imagine like this fort, this old school fort with you waving a Wolves flag by yourself.
We had an 8-minute conversation about this golf simulator that he and Steamsman did, in which they played 18 holes. It was great. Fun talk.
So when you say simulator, you're not talking Golden Tee, right?
No. We made that clarification. No, it was like legitimately like you swing into a screen kind of thing. He said the putting's the hardest part.
I'm just telling you, they want to play Golden Tee, I'll bring it. That's all I did in bars while I was running poker games in Austin for like two and a half, three years. So I am deadly at Golden Tee.
Did you just scream like, Phil Mickelson?
It's like the precursor to J. Croc Ray Cray.
Right. All right, I need
to get healthy, man. You gotta rest up and get healthy for Monday.
I need to go to bed. And you know what sucks is that Kevin Love is doing this charity polar plunge tomorrow that I really was thinking about doing, but now I'm sick. I'll die if I go polar plunge. So
I'm just you can't do that.
Yeah, I'm just gonna stay in my warm bed and miss out on giving to charity.
Sickness is ruined charity.
Yep. Yeah, that's the kids are suffering because of my sickness.
Well, get better. And hopefully you'll be rested and we'll say game time decision on Monday.
Game time decision on Monday. I'll either be dead or mostly dead.
Too late.
Bye now.